Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
Good evening, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. This is Jennifer Hellman, and I want to thank you for listening tonight. With this special day being about love and relationships, I thought it would be really great to talk to Steve Gunn again. Steve has written a book and many articles on soulmates and relationships. He is a psychic that can be reached at stevegunn.net for your own personal readings or more information. He has tons on his website. And I want to remind people today, Steve is taking calls but not doing readings. So if you have general questions, please feel free to call in. And with that, I would like to welcome Steve and thank you for being on air again.
Hi, Jen. Well, thanks for inviting me. And happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Well, happy Valentine's
Day. And happy Chinese New Year as well.
Yes. Yes, it's exciting. And Mercury retrograde. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, a lot
almost
going on.
Done.
I hope we get through this, huh?
Yes. Yes. Last time you were on the show, we talked about soulmates and karma.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the most happiest of talks, but I thought we might just talk a little bit real quickly about the different kinds of relationships, Steve. You know, like soulmates versus like a kindred spirit.
Sure. I mean, it's a hot subject at the moment because there's a lot of talk about twin souls, twin flames, what's a twin flame, what's a karmic relationship, what's a kindred spirit, all that sort of thing. And there seem to be lots of different opinions. I think if we look at sort of what they are as opposed to worrying about the labels, destined situations where people are destined to come into our lives to create some sort of change, which are often called karmic relationships or soulmates, and I don't really hugely differentiate between the two, usually bring with them a challenge from a past life, an issue that's going to be raised through meeting the person. But as usual, clouds have silver linings and silver linings have clouds, so it's not all bad. It's just that they bring something into our lives that causes us to have to deal with some issues. For instance, it could be rejection or things like that. So the challenges that come with these sort of relationships are there to make us change. Now, a kindred spirit is somebody with whom you have a connection, but you don't necessarily have all that past life stuff and all the difficult stuff. It's much more natural, and it tends to be something that comes without all the turmoil.
Well, that's always fun.
Yeah.
That's always nice to know that actually does happen. Though I have to admit, lately, most of the people that have come into my life really have been just kindred spirits, just very easygoing, flowing relationships, and it's like, I'll ask my guides, okay, what's the karma here? And it's just like, just enjoy it, Jen.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, what a change.
I tend to look at these things not from the relationship standpoint, but because they're so complex from the destiny standpoint and
right.
How the universe works. And I said before that I have this theory that the universe does try to show mechanism and process and sense in what would otherwise seem to be nonsensical situations. Anyone who's had a soul connection knows what we mean by a nonsensical situation, when you feel one thing and yet you see another.
Right.
And one of the key aspects I'm always drawn to is this same principle of duality, that every reward has a challenge and every challenge has a reward, seems to be the duality of the universe. And often, all too often, we focus on the pain and we embrace the love and we fight the pain. But I really believe that to know love, you have to know pain and vice versa. And so these challenges that come with soul connections, at first it's really hard to see why you'd be given something you want so much and it's so perfect and then have it taken away.
Right.
But I just see it as the universe's way of forcing us through process to learn things about ourselves. And I talk to a lot of people who, in retrospect, say to me, if I'd been together when I'd wanted to be with that person, I wouldn't have learned as much about myself mm-hmm. or about that person or about my life. So often we can't see it at the time, and we think we're ready, but in retrospect, looking back, we've learned something.
Yes, yes. Now, there are karmic relationships that they really do, like, stick together and go through all the processing together as well. They don't always have one that runs away or disappears on you, correct?
Yeah, it's not. The term runners, I've often been accused of inventing that term. I don't think I did, but...
Oh, no. it's a great one, though.
It doesn't necessarily mean literally. It just means when one or either of the parties is not ready to embrace the connection and everything that comes with it without fear and with an open heart and to just walk the walk.
Okay.
So they don't have to literally run. You can actually even be in a relationship with the person and all these issues come up. But if you actually look at how the karma works, it often is the universe's way of bringing somebody into our lives to highlight some of the issues we have so that we can transcend them. And often you'll find that two people who emotionally and spiritually perfectly matched bring out the worst in each other, and that seems to be part of the process in order that we can face all these things and understand all these things. But it's not necessary that the person has to sort of run away, and that this can even happen in a relationship, but there's either way it's a sort of breakdown of what would be a harmonious situation.
Right. So if somebody is in the midst of one of these relationships, and some of them can be very, very trying and very painful, what are some ways do you suggest them to balance themselves up so it's just not overwhelming and drives you to total insanity?
Well, yeah, I think we all know the insanity phase, and I think to some degree we all go through that. Try not to think it through, because I think what we learn through soul connections is we learn about how humans tend to analyze things. And just the same as we can't put ourselves in the place of somebody who has a fear or phobia that we don't have, or does maybe a different job that we don't have, we can't logically put ourselves in the place of the other person. So to actually fully empathize with whatever they're going through, I don't think it's possible to do unless you're going through it. So often this is a case of fear, for instance. If the partner who doesn't want to play ball is in a fear state, if we ourselves aren't in a fear state, we can't truly understand that. And so we can logically understand it, but we can't empathize with it because we don't suffer from fear. So one of the big dangers is trying to work it out. And I think we've all been through this why.
Mm-hmm.
And the more answers we get, the more confused we are. And so that's a very easy thing to say and difficult thing to do. But I think we have to try and find some acceptance that if this person has something going on, we're not going to fully empathize with that because we don't have that same thing going on. And to try not to think it, but to try to use the very instincts that are torturing us, that are telling us this is going to work out somehow, this is going to, you know, you're going to get through this even though the evidence might be to the opposite.
Right.
To try and tune into that and try and trust it. It's very hard to do, but we all know this, and we've seen people do it. Using logic doesn't tend to get you anywhere.
No.
So that's the first thing. Second thing is that voice inside you that is telling you, often the conflict is because we doubt that voice. We can't just walk away because there's something more than logic speaking to us. Our instincts are telling us the feelings, the emotions. What I say is to try and tune into that. Try and use your own instincts. Try and trust it. Try and get closer to your guides and your sources, assuring you that despite whatever you see, despite what logic tells you, this is something that is destined. It's something that destiny has got a control over, and we haven't. And thirdly, that we often think we're the one that seems to have no choices and the other person has all the choices.
Mm-hmm.
But again, because we can't be in their shoes, that's often not the case. Often, just going back to the case of fear, the other person doesn't want to fear. They would have it any other way, but they're suffering as well. But human nature is that we tend to think we're the only one. So to try and avoid those pitfalls are some of the big things.
Okay, now let's go back to that voice saying, you know, don't doubt this, it's going to work out. Just what if you're resisting and saying, nope, this isn't going to work out, you start doubting it. Does that delay things? If you really are, nope, this isn't going to work, and you try and walk away?
But my personal experience, I don't say belief because I don't think we can come from belief. I think we have to look at the evidence. My personal experience is what I've been through and what I've watched others go through is that we all eventually come to a place of acceptance, however much we fight it.
Right.
And I'm not talking about a relationship like not going off and dating other people, because eventually the same voice that's going to be constantly nagging away at the, okay, let's use the word runner again.
Okay.
It's the same voice that's nagging away at you. Eventually, it's going to get to a point where it has to be reconciled. So we can fight it, but yes, it does tend to delay the process. There's a fascinating correlation between people who sort of call up and say, you know what, I'm fed up now, I'm just so sick of this, I've waited so many years and I've struggled and I've suffered, I've given up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I often joke with my clients, you know, in 2 months I'll get an email from you saying, guess who called?
And
there's a really interesting correlation in letting go and letting God and things starting to turn around. Now, just before everyone thinks, okay, I'll let go and in 2 months I'll call, it's not exactly that you do that. You know, it has to be something inside that you abandon yourself to it.
Right.
But the correlation is fascinating how that happens. And there's a very real energetic, metaphysical sort of cause and effect thing that ties in with that. So it's abandonment to it. It's saying, look, can't control it, can't work it out. I've got to go along for the ride.
Right.
So in answer to your question, yes. Fighting it, as most of us know, is futile. Much as we try.
Yes, and you'll get through it one way or another. No, energetically, let's say you've just accepted it.
Yep.
It's there, it's going to happen. You're just going on, you're becoming more in touch with yourself, you're dealing with your own issues. But you still have, energetically, you feel they're still there. And they're still draining your energy in some way, even though, okay, they're there. Any suggestions for what I call the Klingons?
Sure.
They're not there, but they really are.
Yeah. Well, of course, as you're right. Soul connection is a very real energetic connection. It's telepathic. It's emotional. And you're picking them up, and they're picking you up. So there's real two-way communication. And as you rightly say, if one person is an energy state that's going to drain you, or as well, the other person's going through a lot of emotional turmoil, you'll feel that too. So there's a very real reason to energetically separate. A lot of people worry about this because they think it's cutting the cord. Now, you can't, because it's divinely created. So it's necessary to often isolate yourself from the other person's energy. But the worry of that somehow pushing them away or cutting the cord is not a real worry. In fact, often it works the other way, that if you're not having that relationship on the energetic level so actively, in other words, you can't pick each other up so easily, often that hastens the person coming to you physically to get close to your energy again. So there's a ritual I teach of pushing the other person's energy away. This goes against the grain, because a lot of people want to send love and light. They want to help the other person.
Right.
And so you usually find that people want to do that for a while and then realize that how much the other person's energy is affecting them and accept that it won't trash the connection, but they want to sort of leave them to deal with their own stuff. So there's a ritual I teach as a meditation, which is visualizing a circle around you. And this is for any energy, not just a soul connection. This also helps keep other people's energy away from affecting you. And to very assertively push any energy that's around you outside of that circle. It's a simple ritual. You just visualize and often use a hand, but push everything out. And it's very powerful, and it really does work, but you have to be very determined about it. And simply going through the ritual will actually push the energy outside of that circle within which you can have your energetic isolation.
Right, your breathing space.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting, even people without soul connections, often, if they're very sensitive, they pick up a lot of stress, and after doing that meditation, feel more relaxed because they don't realize how much they are affected by the people's energy sticking to their aura.
Right. So is there anything else you suggest if you have somebody, let's say you do the circle, you push it out, you get a breather, how often do you do this circle? Should you do it daily? Should you do it just if you're feeling a little off? I mean, how often do you do this meditation?
Well, I would recommend, when I was going through this, to do it daily because, as you rightly say, as we're working through our issues and we're growing spiritually, we become more sensitive anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good ritual to practice every day just to keep our energies clean and calm. Even if that's just from an argument at work or something like that, it's a good ritual to give ourselves breathing space from everything that we're sensing, because usually at a time like this, we're not on our most stable. We need all the grounding and all the space we can get.
Right. One way that I've always used, Steve, is always a sea salt bath for clearing my energy.
Yeah.
And we have a call. Welcome, caller.
Thank you.
What is your name?
Mike.
Mike. What's your question, Mike?
I'm listening to you guys, and very interested in what you're saying for a variety of reasons. And in some respects, I'm new to some of the ideas you're talking about.
Okay.
People that I know would say, no, that's not really the case, Mike. You're more experienced, you might say. But a question I've got is, coming from the practical standpoint of a muggle, say, for example, somebody who doesn't really have any experience with soul connections, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question I had for you two was, assuming for the moment that you are trying to solve relationship problems and you've tried things that work and don't work, are there some criteria that you can use to say, okay, this is a soul connection that we've got here, it's really inexplicable, as compared to saying, okay, well, this person has early childhood stuff going on, I know that's what the problem is, and I know that my childhood stuff gets away, her childhood stuff, or that sort of thing. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question is, would there be criteria where you could say, oh yeah, well, this has come up, therefore it means it's something that happened before we were born. And what I had in mind when I thought about this is an old marriage that I had. All of a sudden one day I had a realization that, a dream actually, where I imagined that we had been together a long time ago, in say the 1400s, and we were actually brothers. And since she was a woman, of course, that would be a strange thought. And it occurred to me, well, you know, there's so much going on here, I just don't get why this is not working. Now, if you look at it on a practical basis, you could see that she was fond of drugs, I wasn't. And it made me nervous, and it made her nervous, and I was nervous about it. So, what was the first criteria about that? So I suppose I should stop talking and let you guys answer.
Dave?
Hi, Mike. That residual karma, that lesson, however that's manifested from the past life, the whole drugs thing, it would normally be something like the situation you've got, or a rejection issue, or an insecurity, something that's going to get in the way of the relationship working properly, is the karmic hangover from the past life. And what I mean by karma, is the certain issues have been brought into this life that need to be resolved. And what we're probably talking about in this situation, and correct me if I'm wrong, is not the drugs per se, but the need for them, and what basic fundamental emotional thing that they're resolving, yeah?
And not so much to correct it, but just to amend my understanding of it, is that if you want to check out of your body, that's a quick way to do it, but it really doesn't get you where you want to go in the end. you don't want to be in your skin, in effect, is what she was doing. She didn't feel comfortable in her own skin.
Yeah, so that, what I think we're talking about is what karma did she bring forward that she hadn't resolved within herself to feel comfortable in her skin. So that would be a karmic issue. In other words, somebody that has something in their life that hasn't resolved, that most likely started in the past life and has come into this life to be resolved. So I would suggest, from what you're saying, that that is something that this connection was meant to bring you together to start putting pressure on to resolve. So that the relationship was you bringing the pressure on her to deal with that.
It's a very curious thought. I'm a fan of physics, and I'm a fan of energy, so the thought that something energetically could carry over from one life to the next is, for me, on a practical basis, it's a very strange thought. But having met the people I've met in my life and had the experience I've had, I go, well, you know, who am I to question that? If it works, okay. And, for example, the reason I come to be calling you tonight is I had put off meeting a guy that I had heard about 25 years ago. He was a very good intuitive, and he's done work with people in finding buried archaeological sites. He's the kind of guy that can walk over the ground and say, here's what you're going to find, here's what it's going to look like, and it's not what you thought it was, it's going to be this shape, it's going to be this color. And up until the time that he started doing this, nobody really knew that he could do it. He had hidden it from everybody. And the reason he did is because he would be abused for it. They were afraid of him. So I was, of course, afraid of his ability. For one reason, I finally gave up is because I needed to meet the guy. But the reason why I mention that is he is fond of writing books about people that he channels. And he's a very funny guy. And he said to me as I was having lunch one day with him last fall, you know, if you're, I suppose you won't mind too much if I get a little blue on the air. If you're an asshole when you're alive, you're going to be an asshole when you're dead. And it broke me up instantly. He's a very practical guy.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody like this to be sitting, he's sitting right in front of me. Somebody articulate, somebody energetic, and somebody funny. If this guy believes this, and he's buying into a theory of a life before here, I got no reason to disbelieve it.
Right.
So it's trickier for me to make the leap from what he believes to what I believe, and that's why I was asking the question that way.
Well, the concept of nothing ever ending in the energetic universe is, I think, what's underpinning this, isn't it? That in the physical universe, there's birth and death, and there's a beginning and an end. In the energetic universe, there is no end, and so that your soul is reincarnated many times back into the physical universe. And so I think, can you accept that concept that in the energetic universe, it's the same in physics, you can't create or destroy energy, it's the same in metaphysics, so a soul doesn't just cease to exist, yeah?
I can accept it, and only because I've had so much precognition and so many unusual experiences. I know people that have had the same kind of experiences. There's no other explanation. It's simple. Your skin does not, your consciousness does not stop at the boundary of your skin. It goes way past that. And what happened with me on a personal basis is earlier in my life, I started into college as a science student and walked out instead with a bachelor's degree in religion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can accept it. Even if I use the phenomenon of what I experience, it doesn't mean it's not something I'm blown away by. So I can accept it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of from the same school because I was very cynical about this whole thing. I'm one of the people that never wanted to do it. But what I say is the universe had, you know, other answers. And I came from a sort of technical managerial background. And I learned that way. And I always feel that's quite an advantage because there's very little about there's no aspirational side to it to me. I just want to treat it in a very practical, grounded way. And I don't work on belief. I'll work on what I can discover. So there's still, obviously we keep learning, but I feel that's an advantage to have come from a fairly cynical, questioning background and to have discovered it that way.
I suppose, but it also put me off by 25 years because what's happening to me now is once you finally check into the party and go, okay, well, you know, those things you're experiencing, Mike, are things which are going to happen again and again, and they're repeatable. I could have been farther along with what I was doing 25 years ago than I am now.
No, everything is divine timing. So if you think you've wasted time or anything, you haven't, Mike. You're exactly where you're supposed to be now.
I agree, absolutely, because I think there isn't anybody on the planet who doesn't think, if I knew this then.
Yes.
Right. It's such a curious thought, because you have a choice every moment of your life. Okay, I can learn this now, or I can learn this later.
Right.
And in some sense, it makes me more of a convert, you know, and more interested in being accurate about what I'm doing now. And I find that what I'm doing is I'm writing about those experiences, and also I'm very convinced about them. I said in some of my writing recently, you know, I really don't care to have you telling me that you don't believe what I'm saying. You know, you can choose it or not. And if you don't like it, you can leave. And I won't hold that against you. You know, you're open, you're free to believe what you can. So, and I'm not the only person that believes that. I've had teachers who, like you, were trained in technology. And what I find, though, is I'm attracted to the people that can talk intelligently about physics and about quantum mechanics, because my brain is much more comfortable if there's some sort of inkling of an explanation about how the phenomenon, in this case, in the past life, can happen. And
yeah.
then when I get to the point where I can't really go much further on the explanation, then I'll fall back on something religious. And it can
yeah.
be something simple, like something I read a long time ago in a translation of a Chinese Buddhist text. The guy asked the monk the question, well, is it true that you live on from one life to the next? And the monk answers, well, what do you think about lighting a candle from another? Is the flame the same from one candle to the next? And I thought that was a great answer.
Yeah.
Because the material you're burning is different, but the flame started the next flame. The first flame started the second flame.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really answer the question, though. It doesn't give you a concrete black and white thing. Yeah, here's what you depend on. So I was curious about all that, because what's happened with me over the past 6 months is, after I met this guy I was talking about, subtly, but all of a sudden, now I've bought into the idea of past lives. There I am, and it's a pretty unusual thing for me to think in that at this point in my life, after having a child and having a professional career that I do. It's just, it's a curious place to be. I like it. Just it's surreal. That's the one. It's surreal. That'll work. There it is.
But congratulations and welcome.
Well, thank you. So that's it. I'm done talking, unless you guys had something else you wanted to comment on.
Well, thanks. You brought up some good points, and one of the things I'd like to echo in that is that a lot of people who do experience soul connections find it's their wake-up call to the energetic universe, because the brain doesn't accept that sort of thing. But when you find something going on inside you that just doesn't make any sense, it is one of those things that does cause us, it's not the only thing, but it's one of those things that does cause us to go inside and say, this is crazy, what's going on? And the number of people it starts on their spiritual path is pretty phenomenal. So I also often call it, you know, God's wake-up call to the energetic universe. And I also go along with your theory of being grounded in practical things, because I find there's an incredible parallel between physics and metaphysics. And like the law of conservation of energy we just talked about, and it's one of my little theories and the things I like to explore about how we know the laws of the physical universe, and the metaphysical universe seems to have them as well. So whilst we're using abilities to read those things that may seem unnatural and supernatural, on the energetic level it's totally natural. It's just a natural that we didn't know we knew about, if that makes any sort of sense whatsoever.
Well, it does to me. I'm not sure that these days I know enough about physics to buy totally into the law of conservation of energy based on what I know about intuitive phenomena now. But I do know that they tend to follow the same patterns. What I'm told recently by my buddies that research in this and write about it, is that it's like most of the world living on a sort of flat plane of existence, like a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're expanding your awareness, what actually happens is you slip off the plane and you go above or below the piece of paper and you dive in and out of it and you fly around and you're not limited by the normal things that you would think were limiting you, including electromagnetic energy. I've got a friend, for example, that says that non-local awareness, that psychic phenomena are not based on electromagnetic energy. He's tested it. He's had people in submarines, you know, having a near remote viewing. And that's just a curious thought. So when you talk about the conservation of energy, I go, okay, well, I can go on that. And that works as a theory on a practical basis, you know, I can say.
It's very hard to comprehend the energy plane as having a different number of dimensions, not having time. I mean, if you look at the works of, you know, Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce and people like that, they talk about in the higher realms of energy, there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, living in a three-dimensional universe, it's very hard to comprehend that, the same as it is to be able to comprehend psychically reading somebody on the other side of the planet or in the next room, but because there's no distance. So it requires a level of acceptance that the human mind can't comprehend, because the human mind can only comprehend three dimensions. But it's a fascinating subject, and I think I'll probably study it for the rest of my days.
Yeah, in my case, I go with, does it feel right or not?
Yeah.
Does it physically feel like the right explanation? And that's what I often have to rely upon.
I think Jen would agree with that. That's a
good definitely point. If it doesn't resonate, then it just isn't going to, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it, is look within and just feel in your heart or your gut, wherever you focus your energy, to see where, how it feels. If it doesn't resonate, it's just something's off.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of, everybody has slightly different perspectives. And I tend to try and be open to everybody's perspective, though it might not connect with mine, but if that's their perspective, that's fine.
Exactly.
So, you definitely have to have it resonate, though. You don't have to agree with people. Everybody has their own truth.
Yeah, so what happens to me on a practical basis now is I'm told I'm having a Kundalini awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like riding a dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I have just, you know, I'm in love with everybody. Okay, one of those kind of feelings, you know. At the same time, I have to be repulsed by people just as quickly. But that makes it important for me when I run into somebody I like that I put a leash on it. Okay? And there are places where I shouldn't go with it, and that's what happened to me yesterday, for example. I met an absolutely enthralling singer last fall. I showed up at her gig. She's got albums out and so forth. And I read the posting at the club, and it said her name. And I thought, okay, this person's going to be a good singer, and it looks like a man's name. I show up at the gig, and not a man. She's very pretty, and she's an awesome singer. And what she was singing about just uncorked my heart instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm around celebrities occasionally, so I'm not usually smitten, but I was just bowled right over. So what happened on a practical basis was I had to back up and really gather what I was doing and say, what's this about, and what do I mean to her, and what she mean to me? So what actually happened was I was so thankful of what she did for me, basically opening my heart in a variety of ways, that I wanted to help her.
Mm-hmm.
But it took her a few months to accept that, because she's pretty. She has guys hitting her all the time.
Right.
But what finally happened is, yesterday, the day before, I had lunch with her, and I agreed to help her with some business things that she really doesn't know how to do, and I do. And I get to thank her with that way. And the net effect is, I'm letting whatever energy needs to flow through me just flow through me. And I still get to know her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to meet her friends. And that is, you know what the curious thing about it for me is, men are taught in our culture to think with their bottom half. and somebody reminded me about the day. And so that's the first way that I would want to connect with somebody that looks like her. But what happened today is exactly what I've seen women do in my 20s, which I'm not 20 now, where they would back up and say, no, I really don't want to connect with you that way. And this is not about lower chakras. This is about how I feel about you as a person. And I really didn't understand it then. Didn't get it, right? And now I get it. And I would no more want to sleep with her than I would with my sister.
Right.
So it was a very interesting experience for me in the sense of where my life has gone and the energy that I'm willing to accept and that I find appropriate. And I wouldn't want to hurt her. So I'm not sure where, you know, this whole change in energy is going yet, but something else.
Well, it's a never-ending journey, and the dynamics of energy between you and all the people that come into your life will be constantly changing, but it sounds to me like you've done exactly the right thing. Let the energy work itself out, read it as it is, and allow it to flow.
Okay.
I asked a lecturer last fall, a statistician with UC Davis. She was at a conference about remote viewing. And I got all excited because I'm groping for explanations on how the phenomenon of soul connections happen and how the phenomenon of remote viewing happened. And I asked her, so how is this possible? What's the mechanism? Because you're saying it's not electromagnetic. And she said, you know, I can't really answer that directly, but I want you to look up a book called Flatland by Edwin Abbott. And in it, he describes Victorian life. And it will provide you a sort of tangential explanation about how this could be possible. And that's where I drew that just a few minutes ago, I drew that analogy for the planet paper, because that's what he talks about. It's a curious little book, but it just got me outside of the normal two dimensions into three and four. And I'm always looking for explanations about something so I can at least have a framework to think about. That's all. So I would like to hear you two talk more without me on the line. How about that?
Well, I want to thank you for calling, because you did add a lot to the conversation. I do appreciate you listening and calling in.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Bye.
There is a lot of information for people to absorb and discern, isn't there?
Yeah. One of the interesting things that keeps coming up for me, and one of the most fascinating things is how we as humans perceive prior to any sort of awareness of the energetic level, be it soul connection, awakening, whatever. And when you actually look at how we think mentally, how we rationalize things mentally, there's a lot of holes in it. For instance, I mean, people say to me, how do I know I've got a heart chakra? And I say, well, you felt love and pain. Now, go to a doctor, go to an electronics engineer, they can't measure that. They can measure the electrical impulses that your brain receives from it, but they haven't got a meter that measures love. Yet, everybody knows it exists. So, we have this peculiar perception of accepting things like that, which is a very common example of a spiritual energy, but we can't measure it. So, we sort of have a conscious blind spot. Yeah, and we label things like intuition and sixth sense and that sort of thing. But it's only when that we're forced to accept it through sort of circumstances like this and go beyond it that we really start to question something that we had this conscious blind spot to. Am I making sense?
Yes, you are. Yes. And it is very fascinating. I mean, you think life is normal, then something just throws you totally off track to make you reevaluate everything you thought you knew.
I have a little test question I ask people, and I say, if you toss a coin 100 times, what's it going to come up heads and tails? And they say, well, about 50-50. And I say, what's that? And they say, random. And I say, random would be 70-30, 80-20, 60-40. And they say, oh, yeah, you're right.
Right.
And it's just a silly example of how there's order and structure in the universe. And yet, we say it's random. So they're just little tricks to show how we're trained to think in certain ways and not actually rethink and get closer to how the universe does work.
Right. And even with, you know, soul connections, we're really brought up to that if somebody comes in, they're supposed to be it.
Yeah.
And then when you go through all the lessons, they may be it, and then again, they may not be.
Well, I think the problem is that we're getting into the area of human need, aren't we? I mean,
yes.
If we talk about love, love is not supposed to have any relationship to pain. I mean, in practice it does, doesn't it? I can't remember the Shakespearean quote, but it's something to the effect that love and pain go together.
Right.
Now, my sort of theory is that pure love, which is a very advanced concept, does not have pain with that, because the pain comes from, in certain soul connections, the need to physically reconcile that love on the physical level. So often the pain is something to do with our perception of a logical conclusion between loving somebody and being with them.
Right.
We tend to draw that line, don't we? And often it's meant to make us, it's meant to bring to the surface things like need. What do we need? I mean, the concept, one of the Zen concepts is that love is to share what we already have, so by definition, it does not come from need.
Yes. And a lot of times, you really need to love yourself before real love comes in, or non-karmic love.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because we all need, it's human to need.
Right.
And it's part of this enforced development to have this soul connection of whatever nature, the carrot brought in and then whisked away.
Yes.
To make us realize who we are and become self-reliant. And that actually goes back to the energetic thing where we constantly want to energetically connect with the person who is not actually absent on the energetic realms anyway, but it's that need, and we pour energy into it. And often, if, say, for argument's sake, we have a rejection issue, a soul connection, rather than fixing that rejection issue, will give us the worst rejection we've ever had.
Right.
It sort of takes us to the extreme in order that we can address that within ourselves, in order to force us inwards to really look at ourselves for the first time. And being humans, I argue that if we weren't forced to, we'd never do it.
Right.
I mean, if it was George Clooney and champagne, who'd bother looking inside?
Really?
Or whatever, you know. So it's sort of, we are human, and sometimes we have to be forced to take those hard looks.
It definitely, which kind of reminds me of a relationship that was driving me totally nuts, and we just went our separate ways, and I said, all right, what's my responsibility? And they said, Jen, you became an INOP. And I said, excuse me? And they said, an INOP, an insecure, nagging, obsessive bitch. What man would want that? And I'm going, okay, and I look at it, and I laugh, because I truly was. And it's like, whenever I just get in a relationship, it's just like, okay, am I being an INOP or am I doing okay? It keeps me on track. And I'm much more secure now, and I don't obsess. But it's interesting that's the way they characterize me. And it fits with that situation very much. But that really made me look in and say, okay, why was I so insecure? Why was I nagging, and why? And it's really a very common occurrence, at least in women, because they don't get the security of knowing that man's there for them. So they start nagging him. Well, the more you nag a man, the more they're gonna walk away. And then you start obsessing and wondering, why aren't they there for me? And then you're just a bitch the entire time. So, and it's just, it cycles down basically the rejection premise that you were talking about, because basically I was making him reject me so I could go within and deal with that issue. So
yeah, I mean, I did this man-woman thing. I mean, I recognize it in men equally, I think. And we as readers probably read for more women generally than we read as than men. But I think it's a human thing as opposed to male-female thing. I think the
yes.
reason we talk about it as a female thing, because generally females are more open to talk about that because there's societal pressures. Men are supposed to suck it up. But, human rejection is a very important issue. And as we know, the journey of the soul is solitary.
Right.
And this whole concept of growing within ourselves to then be able to share and not having need, I mean, it's a heck of a journey, but it's one that most of us will have visited through the rejection issue one time or another. And as I said earlier, talking to people who say, I'd have given one of my limbs to be in that relationship, later say, I didn't realize how far I had to go.
Right.
And had I got that relationship, I'd never have made that journey. And I can certainly say that too. And I think it's a case of perspective, isn't it? We can see looking backwards.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see at the time, hence the many journey analogies in this.
But yet it's funny because you're not supposed to attach or really look back. And yet you need to really realize how far and really appreciate everything you've gone through.
Yeah.
That, that alone is kind of the duality.
Yes. And to even sort of thank the universe for the lessons, I mean, that's a tough one. That's one we've all sort of chewed on a few times, isn't it? You know, why should I thank that person for doing what they did? But certainly I've come to a space, I and many others have, where you think, actually, you know, thank you, because I am in a better space, a space that I didn't know I could get to from where I was then.
Right. And that's the one thing, that gratitude helps everything.
Yeah, but it's also
it really
human to be upset and angry. I think that just that's just a phase you go through, though.
Yes. You really need to understand that you've got agreements to do this, and that's the one thing that people, at least that I've talked to, that says, and I tell them, what, you've agreed to have this relationship, to have certain lessons, they go, I didn't agree to this. And it just doesn't make sense to them that they actually asked for this.
Well, I agree with them. I want to see where I signed. Can you produce the document, please?
Oh, well, they, you know, I actually asked them. They said, Jen, remember that dream when you were 13? They actually showed me all my lessons when I was 13. So it's real, people.
Well, your guys are being tough with you. I just say to people, you know, don't confuse a soul connection with the ideal relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the tough one, isn't it? Because the level of pain, the level of intensity of the whole thing often can be confused with this is a perfect relationship, because it's also extreme. And what I often say, and this makes me some sort of anti-romantic force in certain circles, is that those connections, when you do complete the karma, that intensity goes away. And the relationship, when you have it, is still incredibly loving, but it isn't the roller coaster ride. And I feel sometimes we as humans think it should be the roller coaster ride. You see what I'm saying? That it should
yeah.
be some crazy extreme thing. But the best relationships, even the soul connections that have the crazy extreme, come together, find a peace. So often to not confuse some of the roller coaster ride with love, you know, the level of pain equals the level of love sort of thing.
Well, don't you think that what we're all trying to achieve is that unconditional love? Where, you know, and you can just speak your truth, and they just accept it and accept you for everything you are. Isn't that what we're truly trying to work for?
Yeah, but we're here on planet Earth, so that's
I know, let's get a reality check.
Yeah, absolutely. And this thing about belief as well, belief is a really important issue. As you probably gathered, I'm a follower of Zen. And I'm always annoying people by saying belief is reality for one person. And
right.
The Zen concept is that the truth is in any event or circumstance, and what we're tasked to do is to find that truth.
Right.
And you can think it's one way, I can think it's another, but eventually we'll all find that truth,
mm-hmm.
which again is transcending the thought. So not to get too into Zen or metaphysics, but this is about lessons, and it's a cliche, it's not anti-romantic, because it is about love, it's about pain, it's about human experience, it's about progress, it's about development. And it's about getting to often a space that's so much better than we could ever imagine had we been allowed to have our free will.
Right. Because, you know, in reality, it'd be kind of boring if we didn't have these lessons.
Well, certainly in my life, I look back and realize if I'd had total control, I'd never have got to a place where I should have been. Because I didn't know enough. I needed the universe to sort of, you know, put
right.
me through these things. And I hear a lot of people say that.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, I look back at my life, and it was a pretty bizarre experience, but I wouldn't trade any of it. It happened exactly as it was supposed to, and it was all beautiful. It was the bizarre beautiful, intense, very much made me grow and realize who I truly am and what we're all here for is to go through those lessons. And so it's very interesting, the whole concept, and it is coming up very, very strongly that the divine compliment is coming for everyone. I've read many channels that they're saying that, and I think it's kind of heating up that need in a lot of people and kind of forcing a lot of lessons real quick so they can be in that place so the divine compliment truly is there and things go smoothly.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's a greater incidence of people with karmic lessons, soul connections, everything. So absolutely, the sort of foot on the gas scenario.
Yes, most definitely.
I think one of the difficult things is what I refer to as ego death, which is when we can abandon control, because that ties in very much with insecurity, and certainly something I knew well. Most people would, is to actually let go and let God, this whole concept that we're not isolated, we are part of a greater mechanism, and to say, let God drive for a while because he seems to know what he's doing and he's not listening to me.
Right.
That seems to be the turning point, doesn't it?
It really is. And then you get some kind of miracle and say, well, maybe they are listening. Whenever I hit those points, and it's faith, and everybody, I think, has those moments of doubt that you go, well, maybe I'm really off. But as I was listening to a program earlier, it's just that everybody is exactly where they're supposed to be on their path. And as Mike says, he feels like he's 25 years behind his pace. And no, you're not. There's certain things you had to go through before you get to that beautiful point at the end. So you want to make it as exciting as possible.
I think the human concept of hanging on as well, and this comes very much in relationships, that we think of one of everything, don't we? As humans, we think of the ideal job that lasts forever, the ideal relationship that lasts forever. And that itself is at odds with this concept of the journey and the concept of successive experiences. And this, again, links back into the soulmate situation. You know, is this my soulmate? Is this my perfect partner? Well, the answer is you've got more than one. And that the concept of multiplicity, the concept of succession and progression, the concept of the journey never ending is something, while we're still in ego mode, while we still have that need to have permanence and security through permanence, that we're pushed to understand that change is, as Einstein said, the only thing that's constant in the universe is change. And that's very much part of that ego death thing of, we're on a journey, it has to be a journey. Some things have to end in order for others to start. And that to me, is certainly what I see is one of the big concepts that's difficult to get with soul connections, because there's a great confusion between a soul connection and the one, permanence forever, that's it, game over.
Right. Most definitely. And on that note, I want to thank you, Steve, very much for being on air yet again. You are always welcome to be on. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And I want to thank the listeners for listening to air. And if you want to check out more information about Steve, it is stevegunn.net is his website. I really highly recommend you do. There is a lot of great information on there. So until next week, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspiration. Till next week, thank you, God bless, and have a great week.